So as far as like cracking and popping of the joints, it's pretty normal. I mean, I can do it almost on command with some of my joints, like my elbow, my wrist. But I don't tend to worry about that, but I also don't encourage it either. So I'm not like trying to go pop, pop, pop. Like you'll see people do the neck, I don't think that's necessarily a healthy habit to purposely do that, especially if it's just repetitive. I would want to maybe go through, that's why I would go through a full range of motion before I would just focus on cracking any particular area. I would see a functional range release practitioner. So functional range systems is the mobility system that checks the mobility and prerequisites of each joint capsule itself. So we know that the only factor of movement is based upon central nervous system input it gets from the joint capsule itself. The joint capsule sets the muscle spindle, which says I want a really tight muscle or I want a really loose muscle. So for example, there's a term they call it 90 plus 90 doesn't equal 180. So I can get in, okay, what degrees am I with my hip right here? About 90 degrees, okay? Now I can do that with my right side too, right? No problem. How come I can't do it at the same time? What's limiting? There's no muscle that crosses between. So why wouldn't I be able to go all the way down? Because the joint capsule is saying, no, you're gonna get injured. You don't do this. So I'm gonna protect you by tightening the muscles. So the joint capsule itself understands the ranges of motion. So as far as cracking and popping, that's not something I would really necessarily worry about, but if your client was worried about it, I'd have them see a functional range practitioner. So functional range systems, like I said, it's kind of like this. So we got FRS, or functional range systems, and you have FRC, you have kin stretch, and you have FR, and you have FRA. Okay, and this is a full mobility system to improve the quality of movements. So you have FRC, which is the conditioning of the mobility joint that we talked about, like control articular rotations, we do pals and rails, we get our tissue in its end range and we produce force. So it's like PNF stretching, but self-PNF, okay? Kin stretch is the class version. So it's like a yoga class, but teaching FRC. Okay, there isn't any construction instructors in Wilmington. So if that's something that you wanted to do, I mean, it's gonna be eventually here, so might as well be the first one. FR is the manual practitioner. They would actually go in and they would be able to really assess the joint capsule. They'd understand the tissues better than the FRC or the construction instructor, because they actually have some type of chiropractic degree or physical therapy degree. So in order to get FR, you have to have one of those degrees. But you can still take the course and get to know how to like manipulate tissue and what to sense for. So we have aberrant tissue. If you were to start palpating tissue and you start getting feedback or some type of resistance back, we call that aberrant tissue. So an FR practitioner, they would be able to assess that actual tissue of the cracking and tell you specifically if it's okay or not okay. And then you have FRA, which their job is to assess your CARs, your controlled articular rotations. So you can get all these certifications. I have this one only. This was an $800 certification. It was, you know, once you get into a corporation or a gym, sometimes they'll pay for you to get certifications. I know Live Oak will pay some of their employees to go get certifications. So you can pick and choose maybe one certification, two certifications a year. So I can use my professional development money if I want, and I can get kin stretch next. Or I could get a yoga certification. But I already have a yoga certification, so that's why I think it's really important for you to kind of broaden your horizons. There's functional patterns, which we haven't talked about. They're really up to date when it comes to sling systems, and they think, if you haven't checked out functional patterns yet, they're a totally different type of attitude when it comes to fitness. So if you want to check out hashtag functional patterns on Instagram, check them out. They are doing their own thing. They don't like any conventional lifting at all. They're all about like functional patterns. They'll create a pattern and they use the sling system. So all their trainers are trained with their system, which is basically sling systems training. So you'll find that there's fitness niches and there's bodybuilders, there's, you know, power lifters, there's athletes, but they could all use some type of mobility training or yoga training with the breathing training. So we know that diaphragmatic breathing and yoga is really important for our clients, especially when it comes to stress. And we're going to learn about stress and cortisol levels today in the endocrine system. What other questions do you have about fitness or health or the profession? Depends on the gym. So there's probably 50 gyms you can choose from as a trainer in Wilmington. I'm not lying. There's that many. There's small gyms where you have a space this size and you have to probably get your own clients. And then there's gyms like Anytime Fitness, O2 Fitness, Gold's Gym in other counties, not here anymore. And you can get clients because they'll give you a list of all the members at their gym and say, just cold call them. They get a free assessment, they come in, you assess them, then you tell them what type of program you might create for them, and then they'll either buy or not buy after that training session. But O2 Fitness, those big gyms, they're gonna give you the most clients because they're gonna have the most access. But it also means you'll probably make the least amount of money there too because they have control of those clients. And it's also important to note that if you train for O2, you can't just take your 20 clients over to your own gym because they'll make you sign an agreement saying that you can't do that. So I actually had O2 come after me when I went to Matt Skelly training after a couple of years. But I was only there really for a nonprofit, so they really couldn't do anything, and it was like over a year, so it didn't really matter. But they can come after you if you have a ton of clients. I didn't take a lot of clients over, it wasn't that big of a deal. But all I had to do was say that I wasn't training anymore there, which I wasn't. So you have to be careful with that. So when you sign into like O2 Fitness, you're going to be there for a while, and you might take a hit financially, but you're going to get to know a lot more people than at a smaller gym, okay, or at like one of those closed-knit gyms. Okay, good question. Any other questions? Try to get one more question.
Do you have any recommended like podcasts, audiobooks, or YouTube pages for just like general fitness or?
Yeah, as far as so anything you can find with Mike Boyle, he has probably the most experience when it comes to training not only athletes at the Olympic level but also youth athletes, and he is probably the most functional person when it comes to talking about, you know, fitness. So if you find him, if you look up, search Spotify and go Mike Boyle and then go down to podcasts and look his podcast up, that's a really good one. I can send you a link. I'll just try to remember link for podcasts because I do have a lot of good podcasts that I do listen to. I'll tend to search the topic that I'm looking for and try to find a podcast surrounding it. As far as YouTube goes, look for Mike Boyle. He has his own training system and certification system, but I'm not sure if it's accredited through NCAA. That's why I didn't use it for this course. So you have to make sure that it is accredited by NCAA. Some gyms won't accept you. So I'm not sure if his Mike Boyle strength and conditioning certification will ever have that. Maybe it does, but Mike Boyle is really big in the game right now. Andre Ospina, he's got his own YouTube page. And he is the creator of FRS, and he's a sport physiotherapist, spent like 4 years in cadaver labs, really understanding functional anatomy. But obviously he calls it dead person anatomy. When you do experiments on cadavers, that you're not really getting real results because, you know, obviously it's dead tissue. But Andre Ospina would be another good YouTube. You probably find him on a couple podcasts as well. I don't like to push out too many people. I'll send some links. I think Just Fly Sports. I think Just Fly. So go ahead and search that on your iTunes or your Spotify. Someone can look that. Just Fly. See if Just Fly Performance pops up.
It pops up on Spotify.
Okay, so Just Fly is another really good sports fitness podcast. Really good. And then there's a couple ones on like actual nutrition I can send out as well. But I'll look up some more. Okay. Any other questions? All right, here. Nancy. Sean. Isaiah. Brittany. Everybody get theirs back? So I'll just go over a couple maybe that some of us, I think maybe more of us got wrong than less of us, I guess. But we got the first couple four right. I think some people put 2,000 for the number two. That's more of a fitness level. So baseline health benefits for individuals burn at least 1,000 calories a week. Most of us, I think all of us, got the contemporary understanding of health exams and susceptibility for disease as well as an individual's overall wellness. Okay, which of the following components of fitness is most associated with maintaining independence among older adults and elderly? That's going to be power, believe it or not, because it's just power to get out of your chair at that point, right? Power to do a shoulder press and get something out of the cupboards. Okay, that'll be the most important thing for older individuals, especially in their 80s and 90s. A plastic response occurs with repeated stress, which causes chronic system adaptations. Physical activity can reduce the risk for premature death from all the above: heart disease, stroke, diabetes. An individual with no known risk factors for cardiovascular disease recommended to have LDL cholesterol measures no higher than 130. Okay? Actually, really, I mean, for the LDL, you want that to be high or do you want that to be low? Low. LDL low, HDL we want to be high. Okay, HDL actually gets rid of LDL. HDL we can improve by cardiovascular training. Which of the following may potentially protect against cardiovascular disease by reducing dangerous lipid concentrations from the blood? HDL. Diabetics are at higher risk for which of the following? All of the above: blindness, heart disease, and kidney failure. Which of the following would be the most appropriate exercise for a client with osteoporosis? Now, a lot of us, this was a tough one for most of us here. I think the correct answer was back squats. That's NCSF's answer, okay? Would I prescribe back squats for somebody with osteoporosis? And what I think they're trying to get at is what? What do you think they're really trying to get at? I don't think, maybe they'll change this, maybe they won't put back squat, but what do they really mean? Any type of what? Weight-bearing exercise. So what they're trying to tell you is that to build bone, you'd have to do weight-bearing exercise. So like an upright cycle wouldn't be weight-bearing enough. A medicine ball chop slam is more of a power exercise. Box jumps, that's another power exercise. So back squats, I wouldn't recommend putting a barbell on anyone's back, honestly, just because you don't need to load the spine. So when you do a squat, you don't have to load the spine. You can load unilaterally, and you can do 100-pound dumbbells like this, and you're actually gonna develop more power and more strength in the lower body. So you don't always have to load the spine. So that would be something I would kind of just remind you that that's what they're looking for, a load-bearing exercise. So in this case, it is back squats. Which of the following is a result of joint cartilage degeneration and is commonly associated with previous injury? Osteoarthritis. Remember, rheumatoid arthritis is genetic. Okay, osteopenia, that's just the beginning stages of osteoarthritis. And dementia, that is unrelated. Okay, which of the following is not a type of muscle tissue found in the body? That's gonna be rigid, cardiac, smooth, skeletal. So your cardiac muscle is part of the heart, smooth, organs, and skeletal. That's gonna be the muscle tissues like biceps, femoris, and semitendinosus. Which of the following helps to prevent osteoporosis? Weight-bearing activities, adequate calcium intake, adequate vitamin D intake, all of the above. So D. Which segment of the vertebral column has 12 segments and a kyphotic curve? Kyphotic meaning roundness like this. That would be the upper thoracic. You have the lumbar. How many vertebrae are in the lumbar spine? You can shout it out. Five, yeah. What about cervical? Seven, good. Sacral is fused, right? Five joints are fused for the sacral and coccyx. Coccyx is the tailbone, the lowest. Which of the following muscles flexes the trunk? So your rectus abdominis, transverse abdominis is a stabilizer. Erector spinae is extender. Biceps brachii would be by elbow flexion. Local muscle systems are required for which of the following? Remember, local means you're right around the area or the actual control of the joint or the joint stability. That comes first. Training for improved function focuses on muscle balance, adequate mobility, muscle activation patterns, all of the above. All right, and which sling system helps with actions such as stepping up a ladder or stairs? That's gonna be longitudinal. So that would be a longitudinal. Lateral would be going side to side, okay? And anterior oblique would be going forward. And we have posterior oblique would be going backward. Okay, so longitudinal would be going up. Okay, that could also be an exercise like this. Which of the following muscles becomes tight during upper cross syndrome? So upper cross syndrome is the bodybuilders that will walk like this, right? That rounded upper back. That's also part of being a desk worker too. So they'll develop extra tight pecs. So you gotta bring that back by utilizing the rhomboids, okay? Which of the following muscle becomes tight? Okay, which of the following is a closed chain exercise? What do we have? We have pull-up. Okay, bench press, seated bicep curls, and leg extension. Okay, pull-up, correct answer there. And then 20, blank is used to restore or enhance joint function via improvements to the neuromuscular and musculoskeletal systems. That's gonna just be called corrective exercise. Okay, that would be the term for corrective exercise. Now, what we're gonna do is, any questions before we get started on the bonus? Yes?
On number 17, on the online questions, it says the answer is lateral.
It does?
Yeah.
I'll check that out. I'll check that out. Let's see. Did y'all see that as well? Let's see.
I
trying to figure out where I saw that. Let's see. So deep longitudinal lateral. Oh, yes. Correct. So you got 20 out of 20 back there. Congrats. Clap it up for Maddie of G back there. Okay, my mistake there. I had those wrong. Deep longitudinal is going up and lateral, I guess, is lateral is going up. Deep longitudinal is going forward. Okay. I think I may have just got those mixed up. So I'll add, if you got lateral for that question, I'll give you an extra point. Okay. Good fun. All right. Any other questions?
On number 19, which of the following is a closed chain exercise?
Mm-hmm.
The bench press, would that be open chain?
Yeah, because the bar has the ability to move.
Gotcha.
Anything else? All right, so now what we're gonna do is I'm gonna give you some bonus point questions to help you maybe get a better grade on this test. So go ahead and put all your resources away except for your test. So go on the back of your test. Okay. I have 10 questions worth a half a point each. Okay. So you can earn 5 extra credit points on this test. All right, so question number one. Blank is the product of oxygenated blood pumped from the heart per milliliter called cardiac output and the amount of that oxygen used by the bodily cells in a given measured as a AV-O2 difference. Blank, you're gonna write in blank, is the product of oxygenated blood pumped from the heart per milliliter called cardiac output and the amount of that oxygen used by bodily cells and given measured as AVO2 difference. So what is blank there? The product of oxygenated blood, what is that? Pump from the heart. All right. Two, the relaxation between beats is blank, is called blank. So this is when the atrial fills up. What is that called? When relaxation between beats is called what? Okay, number two, still on number two. The relaxation between beats is called blank. That's when the atrium fills up with blood. Okay, number three. The contraction state of the heart when ventricles pump out blood is called what? Three, the contraction state of the heart when the ventricle pumps out blood is called what? Okay, number four. O2 diffuses into blood across alveoli in the lungs and binds to blank. Blank is a protein found in RBC, red blood cell, transport oxygen to all the tissues. So what is the blank? They're the same answer. O2 diffuses into blood across alveoli in the lungs and binds to blank. And this blank is protein found in red blood cells, transport oxygen to all tissues. Six. If you can get three or more of these steps, or sorry, five. If you can get three or more of these steps, you'll get credit. So what is the steps of blood going into the heart and out of the heart? What are three of those steps? So the blood goes in the heart, where does it go? What's the steps?
Talking about like anatomy, like parts of the heart? Or?
Yes, parts of the heart. So how does the blood get in the heart? If you can get three of those steps, and how does it get out of the heart? If you can get three of those steps somewhere. So you have different parts of the heart. So there's seven total steps. And I'll tell you the first and the last. Okay, the first step is the superior or inferior vena cava, which is deoxygenated blood. The last step is the aorta, blood leaving the heart. You can get three combined steps in between that process, you can get credit for question five. Needs more time for number five. After the superior inferior vena cava, where does the blood go? And then where does it go after that? Six. I'll give you the first and last steps for arteries. Now, when the blood pumps out into the arteries, it goes into the blank, then the blank, then the blank, and then it returns through the veins. So it goes arteries, then the blood goes into blank. Then the blood goes into blank, and the blood goes into blank, and then it goes back through the veins. If you can get three steps from there. So it goes in, the arteries take oxygenated blood to the tissue. What does it go into after the arteries? Then it goes into blank, and then it goes from the veins to the heart. Number six. Anybody need time for number six? All right, number seven. When you perform a 60-yard shuttle run at full intensity and you're using the ATP-CP system, how much time do you need to rest after that 60-yard shuttle run to get your ATP-CP system fully ready to go? How many minutes of rest? Okay, number eight. Now I'm doing a vertical jump. I'm using my ATP system. How many seconds of rest do I need to do that vertical jump again to be fully 100% ready to go? How many seconds do I need of recovery time when I use my ATP system? Number nine, when I'm working out or when I'm jogging up to 3 minutes, what is responsible, what is the energy system responsible when I'm utilizing energy for up to 3 minutes? What is the energy system responsible for keeping me going for up to 3 minutes? And number 10, after 3 minutes, what energy system takes over? After 3 minutes, what energy system takes over? You're all set. You can just hand them forward. Okay, and if you put lateral for that one, I'll definitely make sure you get credit for it. That he's going to be teaching the sling systems for us at the end of the course, right? All right, so we should get out of here a little bit earlier today, which will be nice. We're gonna go over the endocrine system, and then after today's class, we'll make sure that I send a link out for some of the podcasts. Now the answers to the test, blank, what was the product of oxygenated blood? What is that called? VO2 max. Okay, two, what is the relaxation? What is that called?
Distal.
Distal, yep. And contraction?
Systole.
The diastole is when it relaxes, systole is when it contracts. What is the protein found in red blood cells and binds to what? Hemoglobin. Yep. O2 diffuses into blood across alveoli in the lungs and binds to hemoglobin. Okay. Five, blood flows through the heart. Okay. First, deoxygenated blood, superior inferior vena cava. Then it goes to the right atrium, then the right ventricle. Then it goes to the lungs, replaces oxygen with the carbon dioxide. Then it goes to your left atrium, left ventricle, and then it goes out through the aorta. You get any three of those together. For arteries, it goes out through the arteries into arterioles, into capillaries, then into venules, then into veins. Okay, arteries, arterioles, capillaries, venules, then veins. Okay, and then 60-yard shuttle run, that's 2 to 5 minute rest in the ATP-CP system. 8, ATP vertical jump would be 90 seconds. 9, up to 3 minutes, that would be the glycolytic system or glycolysis. And 10, over 3 minutes would be aerobic metabolism. Okay. Now, if you're performing a 60-yard shuttle run and you need 2 to 5 minute rest, and you're using the ATP-CP system, some people might get confused and be like, well, do I have to wait 2 to 5 minute rest, like from in between like sets if I'm working out? A little bit different, okay? 60-yard shuttle run is as fast as you can, and in order to restore ATP-CP, you need about 2 to 5 minutes. Now, when you're working in glycolysis, and you're doing like weightlifting and hypertrophy training, it's a little bit different, okay? You're gonna rest probably about 60 seconds in between sets. So the endocrine system. So the endocrine system is responsible for the hormones that take place inside the body. The endocrine system can fluctuate, obviously, based on your thyroid production, whether you're hyper or hypo, have a hyper or hypo thyroid. Hormones depend on your anatomy and physiology. And also is based on your gender. So men have more testosterone, 10 times more than women, and women have more estrogen, okay? But both men and women need testosterone to grow muscle and estrogen for bones, actually. Okay, endocrine system, it's a complex network of organs that direct all bodily systems. Okay, impacts reproduction, growth tissue, repair, recovery, exercise adaptations, and energy metabolism. Some organs surpass their endocrine role, such as the hypothalamus and pancreas. And here are all the different glands that secrete hormones. Okay, you have the hypothalamus, pituitary gland, pineal gland, thyroid, and parathyroid glands, the thymus, liver, ovary, testicles, placenta, adrenal glands, and pancreas. Does anyone know anyone that has a hypo or hyperthyroid? Okay, that's pretty common. it can affect fertility as well. So if you're hyper or hypothyroidic, you can develop issues with pregnancy. And so if your thyroid isn't working well, your doctors are going to have to check those levels to make sure that they're a little bit higher, or that you're producing enough thyroid. Endocrine system, you have eustress and distress. So eustress is positive and distress is negative. Okay, distress increases cortisol levels. Okay, eustress increases neural efficiency, increases vascular compliance, increases oxygen extraction, increases cardiac function, and increases musculoskeletal integrity and function. Okay, all stress causes a hormone response. Okay, there's recovery and there's nutrition that take part in hormone response. You have anabolic hormones, okay, that's gonna help you increase or to develop or to grow. And then distress or catabolic hormones break your body down, okay? So you're in a catabolic state if you don't have enough calories in your body and you're working out, you're actually in catabolism, okay? Platelet adhesion, cortisol production, increased LDL and triglycerides, susceptibility to low-grade inflammation, and loss of protein sparing mechanism. Okay, so that means that you are starting to use protein to fuel your workouts, which is something that we don't want to do because muscles are what is responsible for the movement of the bones. The role of the hormones released from glands to direct actions of other tissues via chemical signaling. So basically, there's a certain receptor site for each hormone, and steroid-versus polypeptide hormones. Each hormone can only interact with tissues with the correct receptor, okay? So there's different types, steroid and polypeptide, okay? Pituitary hormones. Pituitary glands regulate anabolic hormone in conjunction with the hypothalamus. Growth hormone signals the release of IGF-1 from the liver to promote muscle hypertrophy. They generally want you to know what IGF-1 is. Growth hormone, okay, signals the release of IGF-1 from the liver to promote muscle hypertrophy, okay? Heavy weightlifting elicits the greatest response from anabolic hormones. So you're gonna be able to develop more muscle, more lean mass with higher elicits of weightlifting, okay? So your hormones are stimulated basically by everything that you do. Everything you tell your body to do, how you train, what you eat, is what your body is going to kind of conform to, okay? Gonadal hormones, primary release from reproductive organs, example of testes and ovaries, to regulate sex-specific characteristics. Testosterone promotes lean mass development in response to intense weightlifting in both sexes. Men have 10 times more natural concentrations. And estrogen is integral to bone maintenance in both sexes. Men must convert testosterone into estrogen, called estradiol. Okay, so there is obviously performance-enhancing drugs like synthetic testosterone, okay? And what happens when bodybuilders or strength lifters take testosterone is that you get almost like 50 to 100 times more concentrations of testosterone. What that does, it builds not just your biceps, but also your lean muscle or your intestines, because your intestines are made out of muscle. So what type of muscle is your intestine? Smooth. So smooth muscle grows, cardiac muscle grows, skeletal muscle grows. Now those things aren't necessarily good things, because what happens when you come off of a cycle of steroids or testosterone that is synthetic? Men will develop breast tissue because they'll start trying to combat it with estrogen. Okay, and estrogen equals out the testosterone a little bit. So if you're taking synthetic hormones, just know that you can have more breast tissue in men, and it can convert to gynecomastia, which would be hardening in tissues behind the nipple, which cosmetically is not that pleasant. So if you have clients that are like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about taking, you know, some type of like testosterone therapy or whatever, I would just really not push that on anybody. You know, as obviously a college teacher, if I was on something like testosterone and telling people not to take it, that would be, you know, not cool. So I've never taken any synthetic hormones that have altered my testosterone levels, and I don't think athletes should. And I honestly think it would be better for bodybuilding if no one was able to take those steroids. Because I mean, when I started competing, I realized that I could only go to a certain level. Because there was just like, all right, well, unless you want to take steroids, then you're not going to make it to, you know, obviously the Olympia or whatever, like an Arnold event or something like that. So that becomes the goal. And then you're like, well, I can't compete with people that are basically cheating. So I just got out of that sport because I just thought it was just ridiculous. But as far as clients go, some clients will be on testosterone replacement therapy, or TRT. So individuals over the age of 40 or 50, sometimes they'll go to their doctors. Doctors will be like, oh, your test levels are low. Let's put you on some TRT. I still wouldn't recommend that. I still wouldn't recommend anyone taking any type of testosterone replacement therapy because it does alter the system and you'll end up relying on it. So if you get on TRT at the age of 50, if you come off of it psychologically, you're going to be like, oh, my muscle mass is gone. Okay. Physically, you're going to look at yourself. You're going to feel less confident. So emotionally, people can get really upset when their hormone levels rise up and down because of self-esteem and just self-perception. So I don't recommend taking any types of performance enhancing drugs. The only supplements I do recommend are like things like creatine, fish oil, omega-3 supplements, stuff like that. You know, stuff that's regulated that says, you know, regulated by the NCAA, stuff like that, I think is fine, okay? Pancreatic hormones regulate blood sugar levels to limit hyper and hypoglycemia. Okay, hyper, having too much sugar in the blood, and hypo, not enough sugar in the blood. Regulation is facilitated via insulin and glucagon, okay, which is found where? In the liver. Okay. Pancreas also produces digestive enzyme for nutrient absorption in the small intestines. Okay. So you have liver releases glucose into the blood, glucagon released from alpha cells of pancreas. This is all the stuff that they don't really test you on, but they just want you to know that all this is occurring in the body. Okay. And all this stuff like glucagon, insulin, hyperglycemia, this can really affect a lot of our clients. I know a lot of diabetics, and knowing these important factors help you determine, you know, how you might go about training them, okay? Thyroid hormones. Thyroid manages metabolism in coordination with the hypothalamus and pituitary gland, T4 and T3, thyroxin and theothyroid. Hypothyroidism promotes weight gain and limited mental or physical growth. I know someone personally with hypothyroidism, and they have to take medication for that hypothyroidism. And even though it wasn't too far off the average, they still want it working a little bit better because it can affect mental state, it can affect sleep, it can affect fatigue. If you're feeling fatigue, it could be something as simple as your thyroid, which can be regulated. Can it be regulated through food and exercise? Perhaps. But that's something that you and your doctor would have to figure out. Adrenal hormones regulate response to mental and physical stress, including exercise. Okay, adrenal hormones are what is your fight or flight protector. Okay, cortisol levels regulate metabolic and cardiovascular functions. Chronic elevation is catabolic and associated with overtraining. Okay, epinephrine and norepinephrine, or adrenal gland, is potent neurotransmitters that increase circulation, ventilation, and carbohydrate metabolism to repair for exertion different receptors, okay? Your catecholamines regulate the fight or flight response. The fight or flight response is basically your hormones telling your epinephrine and norepinephrine and adrenal gland to produce maximal output. So if you had a fight, or if you had to flight, or if you had to run as fast as you can, your adrenal hormones are responsible for that in your sympathetic nervous system, which shuts down your digestive system and your ability to, you know, want to sleep. That's why you get really aware if there's like a fight situation, all of a sudden you get sparked, and that's part of your adrenal hormones. I once had a chiropractor tell me that I had a low adrenal by holding on to pills of adrenal. And he said that, he goes, hold on to these pills. I go, okay. And then he was like holding my arm like this. And he goes, you let go. And I went like that. He goes, yep, you have low adrenal gland. I'm like, what? I don't believe stuff like that, okay? Sometimes, I think I did believe. I ended up getting like adrenal supplements, but. So sometimes you'll be told that you have a low adrenal gland, but that's something that only a doctor can tell you. fight or flight response, acute surge in adrenal activity, which expedites increased cardiac output. Blood flow and metabolism directly deal with perceived threat. Okay, key concept, the adrenals are vital to managing exercise stress, but chronic release due to nonstop life stress can cause catabolism, fat gain, and immunity issues due to cortisol. Okay, so if you're in a chronic state of stress, if every day you feel stressed out, then your adrenals are going to be always working. You're always going to be in a fight or flight panic state, never going to be able to relax. You're probably going to have low sleep, and you're probably going to have high fatigue. So it's really important to be able to manage your stress levels. And I think the best way to do that is through just breathing, okay? And really focusing more on your breathing than your thinking. And if you think more about your breathing than your thinking, then you're not stressed out about the things that you're thinking about. Okay, so the more you think about your breathing, the more you think about your breathing, and the less you think about stress, okay? And I've lived that for the past 10 years, so I can say that. After getting into, when I first started studying yoga in the year 2000, which was 20 years ago, I really was intrigued with the whole breathing aspect. And just not understanding yoga because it was Eastern was really fascinating to me. And I started practicing it in 2004, but I studied it for about 4 years before taking it. So I knew what I was getting myself into. And even then in 2004, yoga classes, there was like three or four people in them. It was different then, and it was a lot less structured than it is now. But it was really based on, you know, learning how to manage your stress and parasympathetic breathe. And I thought those were the best lessons when it came to yoga. And then I got certified in 2014. And then I really realized that yoga is a parasympathetic state. So the reason why they want you to be able to perform all the poses is so that you can sit and meditate without feeling your body. So if you sit and you can feel your body and you're in a point of distress, then you're not gonna be able to meditate. And if you can't meditate, you can't reach a higher level of consciousness or consciousness, basically being able to control your thoughts, your feelings, and be able to control basically your system and how it operates. Now, I don't get too far deep into that. I try to stay level-headed when it comes to spirituality. I'm not spiritual when it comes to yoga, and I don't think I'm gonna be possessing some super high power, and I don't really get into the chakras, although they're very important to know if you're getting into yoga. But I think, you know, you can only take it so far. I mean, if you're gonna be a yoga teacher and that's gonna be your like thing for the next 20 years, then yeah, you probably should know the chakras and you should know the philosophy. But I think for the personal trainer, I think it's really important for you to know that the breathing aspect is probably the most important aspect that we can teach to our clients. Now, as far as the poses, if you're not certified as a yoga practitioner, generally a yoga practitioner would say don't teach those poses. Coming from a physical education standpoint and knowing that a lot of physical educators can't afford yoga certifications, I usually recommend just doing basic poses and not poses that cause maybe a threat to someone's spine. Like, I wouldn't have high school students getting in a plow pose and bringing their head over their back and doing back bends. I would try to stay within the functions of more of a sport aligned or functional fitness aligned yoga practice. So you can apply the functional range conditioning concepts in a yoga class. So you can actually intertwine that if you wanted to have both of those certifications. Sure. Wim Hof, really, yeah, I like to say that I've practiced Wim Hof, but it's definitely more intense. It is definitely going to wake you up. It's definitely going to give you more oxygen. So basically, Wim Hof method is you take a big inhale through your mouth, not your nose, because you can get more air in, and then you take a big exhale out, you get it all out, and you do, I think, 30 of those in a row. And then after 30 of those in a row, which takes a long time, you take a big inhale, you hold it as long as you can, and then you exhale as slow as you can out. And then that's supposed to surge your whole body full of oxygen. It's supposed to make you feel really good. And it does, and I've done it and practiced it. But you definitely need to be not driving or in the pool or like in the water. You have to be in a relaxed setting. We could do it here, but it would probably get pretty intense. That'd probably be more for the gym setting. But I do recommend, yeah, any type of breathing technique. I like Wim Hof. I like yoga breathing. I like alternate nostril breathing. I like box breathing, which is inhale 4, hold 4, exhale 4, hold again. I just call it box breathing. And you can make the box bigger and bigger. And then I also like a system of breathing, which is a Russian form of breathing, which actually tells you to practice all the different types of breathing. So system of breathing, if S-Y-S-T-E-M-A, is a Russian form of breathing. And they use that in their like high military. When they were training all their guards, they use system of training technique. So that's something, if you're interested in breathing, you can look up system of breathing. So endocrine system summary. So here are the glands and hormones associated in the actions, okay? The endocrine system regulates all major adaptations to exercise as well as the maintenance of homeostasis. So basically the endocrine system regulates and makes sure that everything is in homeostasis, okay? Anterior pituitary, that releases growth hormone, okay, which stimulates IGF, protein synthesis, growth and metabolism. Thyroid releases thyroxine, which kind of goes together, right? Might help you with that one. Stimulates metabolic rate, regulates cell growth and activity. Adrenal cortex releases cortisol and aldosterone, promotes use of fatty acids and protein catabolism. Conserves sugar, maintains blood glucose level, promotes sodium aldosterone, promotes sodium potassium metabolism and water retention. You have your adrenal medulla, which is your adrenal gland, epinephrine and norepinephrine, increases cardiac output, increases glycogen catabolism and fatty acid release, and has properties of epinephrine and constricts blood vessels. Okay, pancreas. That releases insulin and glucagon. Insulin promotes glucose uptake by the cell, stores glycogen, aids in protein synthesis, and glucagon releases sugar from the liver into circulation. Okay, the liver releases insulin-like growth factor, which increases protein synthesis. The ovaries release estrogen, stimulates bone remodeling activity, female sex hormone, and the testes release testosterone, stimulates growth, increases protein anabolism, reduces body fat, and that is the male sex hormone. Okay, hormone response vary based on intensity and volume. We have RT and endurance training, resistance training and endurance training at high intensities equals increased anabolic and adrenal activity. Long duration, lower intensity endurance training equals suppressed anabolic activity, increased potentially catabolic activity. So long duration activity, that's why you see the marathon runners are very thin, right? Because they're in a state of catabolic activity. And so they probably have higher cortisol levels too if, you know, they don't contain their stress, if they're always doing something intense like that. Okay, resistance training and endurance training equals improved insulin sensitivity, which is a good thing. You want to be sensitive to insulin, otherwise there'll be weight gain. Okay, hormone activity is sensitive to variations in training intensities and volume. High-intensity training, particularly above lactate threshold, increases growth hormone release. Testosterone is suppressed during high-intensity aerobic activity, so you're actually you're lowering your testosterone to focus solely on that low intensity. Insulin sensitivity is heightened, and glucagon levels increase with prolonged exercise, making sure that sugar is getting to the muscles. Catecholamines remain somewhat stable during steady state work. Cortisol activity increases with prolonged duration. So the longer the bout is, the more cortisol is going to develop. And aerobic work does not stimulate growth hormone IGF pathways for hypertrophy as seen during weightlifting. So you're gonna see that your strongest looking athletes are gonna be your sprinters on the track, and then the thinnest athletes are gonna be those long distance marathon runners. It's based on what their muscles are doing and how much work they're adding. So hormone response resistance training. So resistance training, this is the big key or take home, that it increases growth hormone, increases IGF, insulin growth factor, increases thyroxine and tyrothyrone, increases cortisol in heavy exercises only, decreases insulin, increases epinephrine, and increases testosterone. Okay? The last thing we'll do see if we can answer these questions without looking at your notes. Which of the following directs functions such as hunger, thirst, temperature regulation, and sleep? What do y'all think? Who thinks it's ovaries? Who thinks it's pancreas? Who thinks it's liver? Who thinks it's hypothalamus? All right. The blank secretes digestive enzymes and also produces hormones for blood glucose management. Gallbladder, testes, adrenal glands, or pancreas? Who thinks it's gallbladder? Testes? Adrenal glands? Pancreas? Okay, so we think it's pancreas. Which of the following is released from the liver and considered to be a primary signaling hormone for the promotion of muscle hypertrophy? Raise your hand for a thyroxin. Raise your hand for insulin-like growth factor. Raise your hand for estrogen. Raise your hand for testosterone. So we split on. Let's do a vote. Ready? Raise your hand for insulin growth factor. Raise your hand for testosterone. All right. So we're going here. All right. Which of the following has the greatest impact on one's rate of metabolism? Raise your hand for pineal gland. Raise your hand for adrenal gland. Raise your hand for thyroid. Raise your hand for pituitary. Raise your hand for pituitary. Raise your hand for thyroid. All right, thyroid. All right, let's check these four out. Let's see how we did. Hypothalamus, nice. Pancreas, yes. Insulin growth factor and thyroid gland. Good job, everybody. All right. Any questions before we head out for today? All right, we'll see you all on Tuesday.